WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. Okay, Elvis fans, you're about to hear some music that you've probably never heard before. It's included on the new 5-CD box set, The King of Rock and Roll, The Complete 50s Masters. The set includes every studio master take of Elvis Presley released during the 50s, as well as some alternate takes, early live tracks, and previously unreleased material. My guest is the producer of this new collection, Ernst Jorgensen. He's from Denmark, where he started listening to Elvis before he could even understand English. In a moment, we'll hear a track that's something of a revelation. It's not a professional recording. It was made in 1953, when Elvis was 18. He went to a studio in Memphis and paid $4 to make a recording of his voice. He sang two songs. The recording was discovered in 1988 in the collection of his old high school classmate. One of those songs, My Happiness, was recently released, but the one we'll hear, That's When Your Heartaches Begin, was never released until now.
The beauty about these two acetate recordings, and especially about That's When Your Heartaches Begin, is that you hear Elvis Presley before anybody got to him, before anything from the music industry really touched him. You hear him singing that song, and you realize that nobody taught Elvis how to sing, how to get that whole Elvis Presley magic onto tape. It was there from the very first day. It was part of his upbringing, not part of what the music business imposed on him.
Let's hear it.
If you find your sweetheart in the arms of a friend, that's when your heartaches begin. When dreams of a lifetime must come to an end, that's when your heartaches begin. Love is a thing you never can share. When you bring a friend into your love affair, that's the end of your sweetheart. That's the end of your friend. That's when your heartaches begin. If you find your sweetheart in the arms of your best friend, brother, that's when your heart aches. Be it. And when dreams of a lifetime must all come to an end, yeah, that's when your heartaches begin. You see, love is a thing that you never can share. And when you bring a friend into your love affair, that's the end.
You know, the recitation that Elvis does at the end of this recording, it almost sounds like an Elvis impersonation, because he's obviously doing it in character. Do you know how he started doing that kind of recitation? I mean, obviously he was doing it before he ever recorded anything commercially.
I don't really, just with like the whistling on a few of those early recordings on "I Love You," because it was in the time there were people who did that, and Elvis picked up anything that was interesting, whether it was from black music or white music or for religious music. You can see that in other situations, like when he does Milkow Blues Boogie at Sun, he and Sam Phillips came up with this idea of you do it slow and then you say, well, hold on a minute, whatever he is saying, and then he speeds up that whole thing. All those little what you'd probably call commercial ideas that were around mm-hmm. somewhere, Elvis picked them up and integrated them into his own music.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Ernst Jorgensen, who is the producer of the new series Elvis, the King of Rock and Roll, and it's the complete 50s masters of Elvis's recordings. We're going to take a short break and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Ernst Jorgensen is my guest. He's from Denmark, and he's the producer of a new 5-CD set of Elvis recordings from the 1950s. Let's get to another previously unrecorded side that you have on the new collection of CDs. This is Fool, 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 recorded in 1955. How did you get access to this?
There was a rumor like 10 years ago that a song called What a Fool I Was had been played by Elvis's record producer, Felton Jarvis, who since died. But nobody was able to track it down. But I had this friend in Nashville who insisted that he'd heard it, and he's a very credible guy. And I looked everywhere. I went to Jarvis's wife. I went to Nashville. I looked for it all over the place, just to realize that when I went through the doors at the business department at RCA, places where people would never go, there was a small letter actually relating to the matter. And we called this guy up, who lives in Texas, and said, did he still have that acetate? And said, sure. And we got it in, and it blew our mind, because this is Elvis very early in his career doing R&B with his two musicians. And the story that goes with it is fabulous, because Leroy, as the gentleman is called, in 55, worked in Texas setting up gigs for artists, and Elvis approached him at the time and said he'd really like to do some gigs in Texas. It was a very early day, so he was basically playing in the neighborhood where he was living. And Elvis went over to his place with his two musicians, and this guy had a facility to do lacquers, and he liked that old Clovis song, Fool, Fool, Fool. So he said to Elvis, do you know this song? And Elvis said, sure. And I think it's a vital historical piece here, because it shows how you went from That's When Your Heartaches Begin and the ballads and the early stuff and actually developed that fusion of R&B and hillbilly music. It's all here, and it's three people, and it's just unrehearsed. It just shows you how natural this music was to Elvis.
Why don't we give it a listen? This is Fool, Fool, Fool.
Fool, 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 that I was too old for you. Well, fool, 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 that I was too old for you. Well, what a fool I was to think that you could love me too. When I first met you, baby, well, I knew I couldn't win. But I just kept on trying, 'cause trying is no sin. What a fool that I was to fall for you. Well, what a fool I was to think that you could love me.
That's Elvis Presley from the new 5-CD set, Elvis, the King of Rock and Roll. My guest is the producer of the set, Ernst Jorgensen. So what was your reaction the very first time you heard this? It must be just like finding treasure to somebody like you.
Yeah, I was so nervous that the lacquer wouldn't play all the way through that I don't think I heard it the first time. But I loved it. I thought it was if not like a missing link, it stressed one of the points that we've been trying to make on this box, that Elvis really knew what he was doing himself, that he had this style. It wasn't forced on him. This was his natural way of singing and playing. And I think this one is, this goes well with the development of his son career. It all fits in and makes the whole thing more credible.
Let me ask you, when you get your hands on a rare disc, are you in a panic until you've had a chance to put it on tape?
Yeah, I'm desperate. but we're very careful with that. I mean, we make sure that no risks are involved in this. We do it with the utmost care when we play them back, and we run a digital tape as soon as we play it the first time, because if it won't play the second time and stuff like that.
My guest is Ernst Jorgensen, producer of the new box set, The King of Rock and Roll, The Complete 50s Masters. More in just 60 seconds. This is Fresh Air. We're back with Ernst Jorgensen, producer of a new 5-CD collection of Elvis Presley recordings from the 50s. Did you find some of the Elvis reissues of the past unsatisfactory in the way they were remastered?
I found basically most of them unsatisfactory. There were two problems. One was that that not a lot of effort and thought had been put into getting a prime source. People seemed to be content with taking whatever tape they found, not checking whether it was an electronic stereo, whether it was like a fourth generation with a lot of hiss on it. That was one problem. The other problem was that a number of engineers thought they needed to reinvent the sound of these recordings, so they equalized them or compressed them, so they changed the whole beauty of those original recordings.
Is there something you'd like to hear played from the from the box set that's an example of a really good master that you found that preserves the original integrity of the sound?
Yeah, without trying to be arrogant, I think you could do that for the whole box. But there's always personal highlights, and I think we found an original master tape of the song called My Baby Left Me and all those songs from that same session that nobody played since 56. And when you listen to that, you can hear the vast difference between what you heard and what you hear now. And I think you will agree that this is still credible. You can believe that this is the way Elvis heard, and that's the way he wanted it to sound.
Let's hear it. So where did you find this master?
This one was actually in the vault, but a lot of the other stuff we found wasn't.
Well, wait a minute. If it was in the vault, how come nobody else had used it?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think if I go further into that, I will criticize some people very dramatically. A lot of stuff we found outside, we were very lucky that some of the people involved with those original Presley sessions kept tapes as well.
You mean like people in the session?
Session musicians? Basically the engineers of those sessions.
Oh.
Elvis did a lot of recording sessions at a studio called Radio Recorders in Hollywood. At the time, they always had two tape machines running, so there were two sets of prime tapes. And Thorne Noga, who ran all those sessions, had kept one of the sets for all those years, never played them, and he was very cooperative when I contacted him. He really wanted us to get access to his tape, because whatever we did to our tapes, they were not there anymore. And we've used those. We've talked to him on how exactly they should sound, how they sounded at the time. We did the same thing with the Sam Phillips stuff from Sun. We went down to Sam Phillips, played it to him, said, are we on the right track here? Is this what you heard in those days? Is this an accurate way of doing it? And that is what guided the whole process. We couldn't talk to Elvis about it. We couldn't talk to the original A&R man, Steve Sholes, because they're not around anymore. So what was our main principle here was Elvis always approved the Marsters in the studio, and he often complained about how they sounded when they came out later on record or on the radio. So that was our guideline. If we could find the original prime, that was what Elvis really liked, and he thought that's the way it should sound. So that's what's on this box. And some of it is incredible. Some of the skills of those engineers is unbelievable by today's standards, not to put anybody down. But if you listen to stuff from the King Creole sessions where there's like 17 people playing at the same time, like three singers, two drummers, three guitarists, a horn section of four people, all recorded direct live onto a mono tape, it's mind-blowing. I mean, the way the drums come forward, the way the whole, where you can hear everything in there, and Elvis is still up there in front. It's fabulous. I think we should really listen to a very sexy classic hip cut called Trouble.
Sounds like a good idea.
If you're looking for trouble, you came to the right place. If you're looking for trouble, just look right in my face. I was born standing up and talking back. My daddy was a green-eyed mountain jack. So don't you mess around with me. I never looked for trouble, but I never ran. I don't take no orders, no kind of man. I'm only made out of flesh, blood, and bone. But if you're gonna start a rumble, don't you try at all. I love me, gonna love me. You mess around with me.
What are the records that you think of as having been inflicted on him by producers or record companies? Material that he didn't want to record or styles that he didn't want to record in?
I think there's few traces of that in the 50s period, but it becomes very evident in the 60s where they made those film deals. I think that Elvis really wanted to be a serious movie actor, and they tried it. They did Flaming Star, Wild in the Country, and King Creole, but it didn't do well at the box. Those films didn't do well at the box office, so they made those movie contracts. It was a lot of money, and then they got caught. They got trapped in there. They had to do them. They made the deals. They made the money from doing them. And that's where Elvis gave up. I think he gave up on those soundtracks because he did two or three movies a year. He had to come up with like from between 8 to 14 songs on three movies per year. And he said, well, there's no way in the world that we can get enough good songs. So in the 60s, I think that where Elvis really cared about his music were the studio sessions he did for RCA that had nothing to do with the movie soundtracks.
Is there an Elvis tape or, you know, disc that you're searching for that after all these years you still haven't gotten your hands on but you know exists?
Yes, there's a lot of that. There's actually 50s material we're searching for, and certainly 60s and 70s. The problem for us working with it going into details as to what they are is that it's going to create so much anxiety with the collectors that we're going to have so many letters asking what it is and when are we going to get it, that until we have it, we don't go into details. But we've located stuff. We know where it is. But not all people are very easy to deal with on that.
So this is the top secret Elvis.
There is a top secret Elvis scenario. And there will always be, there's always going to be the next guy who, for whatever reason, forgot about the tape he had that he did back in 50 or 60 something. And suddenly, because he sees all the publicity around the 50s box, say, oh my God, I need to talk to these guys about these tapes. And that happens all the time.
Well, Ernst Jorgensen, thank you very much for talking with us.
That's been great.
Ernst Jorgensen is the producer of the new 5-CD set, The King of Rock and Roll, The Complete 50s Masters, on RCA Records.